Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. I'm pleased to say that we have with us a man who has been a stalwart in that war for many years. Based primarily in Boston, he is Dr. Charles Jacobs and has founded and runs an organization called Americans for Peace and Tolerance, one of a number of organizations he has led over the years. And throughout those years, he has been a voice of both reason and courage and conviction on matters involving threats to this country, to its freedoms, and to its people, notably arising from the Islamic supremacists and their Sharia program. Dr. Jacobs was with us for our Defeat Jihad Summit last week in Washington and made a very important intervention and, among other things, has published on the subject that we wanted to visit with him today, namely the president's Countering Violent Extremism Summit that is scheduled to begin shortly and that will take place at the White House and, I guess, at the State Department, and what the, well, as you've called it, the denial and deception that is involved in its course. Talk a bit about that, Charles, and welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Frank. You know, the president just can't bring himself to say the actual words that describe the reality, the realities that we face. You know, we've had workplace violence. Now, there's random shootings at kosher delis. He seems to have employed a semantics czar as well as some of the others. Now, what's coming up in Washington tomorrow is a summit on combating not jihad, not Islamic extremism, not radical Islam, but violent extremism. And that's the euphemism of the day. And the strange thing about this, or most ironic and actually shocking thing, is that he's named three cities which are to be the models and pilots that show how this can work. One of them is Boston. Now, I live in Boston, and I remember you coming up, about 8 years ago, joining us in a protest picket line outside a Muslim Brotherhood mega mosque in Boston. And that's the problem here. The very group that the Obama administration program is touting as the go-to Muslim moderate group to help us combat violent extremism is a group that is itself extremist.
Now, talk a bit about that in the specific context of Boston, where you live, Charles Jacobs, and how the administration's narrative really is just completely at odds with the facts on the ground.
Well, yes. I mean, in the 1980s, a man named Abdul Rahman Alamoudi created the first Islamic Society of Boston Mosque in Cambridge, Massachusetts, not far from Harvard. Turns out that this was the mosque that the Marathon bombers, the Tsarnaev brothers, prayed at. Alamoudi was supposed to be the moderate Muslim that the West could look to bridge the cultures between Islam and us. And it turned out that he was instead the model of deception. He was a Muslim Brotherhood. He raised money for Al-Qaeda, etc. That was the seed. Years went by, and the people at that mosque were radicalizing what we know is the historically moderate Muslim population in Boston. And out of that came people like Afia Siddiqui, Lady Al-Qaeda, who's now in jail for more than 80 years for having plotted a biological terror attack in Times Square with Ebola. Out of that came Tariq Mahana, who is now in jail for having plotted a Mumbai-like machine gun attack on shoppers in a mall in Attleboro. Out of that came Ahmed Abu Samra, who is Mahana's partner, who fled to Syria and now is a leader and maybe the guru of ISIS's very effective video campaigns, social media campaigns, etc., etc., etc.
So these are the sorts of people who have been involved with either the Islamic Society of Boston or what has actually been described by its own leaders as the Muslim Brotherhood's organization in America, the Muslim American Society. And yet, Charles, we have this bizarre situation in which the president and his minions, and for that matter, local authorities, the mayor of Boston in the past, the law enforcement community, and so on, reaching out to these same, well, organizations that that have such dubious ties. What does this say, in your professional judgment, Charles, about the whole construct of this countering violent extremism? Are they dignifying and, well, enabling, empowering jihadists by engaging in this kind of denial at best and deception at worst?
Yes, they're enabling jihadism here in Boston. They're enabling the inculcation of radical theology into the Muslim population in the Boston area. And they do this through their semantic games. And there are 12 people now. I mean, we took out a full-page ad in the Washington Times, and it's on our website. There are 12 people who are connected to jihad activities, who are either in jail, dead, on the run, or awaiting trial, all connected to this very group that the summit is inviting in and has worked with as partners for peace, partners against violent extremism. It's just absolutely bizarre. In fact, you know, Obama may have it right. This is the model, but it's not the model that he's saying it is. It's the model for the deception and self-deception that lie at the base of Islamist penetration into American society. What he's doing, Frank, he's bringing his failed foreign policy right here to our shores. I mean, this is, Boston is Yemen, right? Yemen was the model that worked. Libya was the model that worked. Well, now Boston is going to be the model that worked. The question is, works for what?
Yeah. And that's really the heart of the matter, Charles Jacobs. Again, we're talking with the president of Americans for Peace and Tolerance. And you can find more of Charles's work at his website, peaceandtolerance.org. To what end? What is it that the president seems to be doing with this kind of program? Americans, I think, have in large numbers now begun to realize that it isn't as it's being represented. But what do you believe is the ultimate purpose of this kind of behavior, and that we will be probably hearing more about, not only with respect to Minneapolis and Los Angeles, two other model cities that are also very problematic in terms of the administration's outreach, but more broadly?
Well, you know, you're right that everybody now has kind of caught on. I mean, even Thomas Friedman, who's sycophantically followed the president for all these years, has called it ridiculous that he won't say radical Islam. Well, in Boston, you know, one of the reasons they say it picked Boston is because there has been an extraordinarily significant decline in the homicide rate here because of cooperation between the police and the community. And that's the model. You see, this is just crime. Jihad is a street crime. He's the mayor of the world, and he's got crime to deal with, and so he applies this model of community police cooperation. The problem is that knocking over a jewelry store is not the, quite the same thing as jihad. I mean, people who do it don't scream Allah Akbar, and when they shoot people, they say, as Edward G. Robinson would have said, take that, you dirty rat, not praise Allah. So it's a completely flawed analogy, and when you ask me, to what end? I have to say, I have never seen so much speculation about the question, is the president really a Muslim? Is he an Islamophile? Or is he merely like a left-wing college professor who got lucky? I don't believe that he's a Muslim, but my goodness, I mean, it is kind of strange that he doesn't seem to be on our side in this global war.
Yeah. To the contrary, what we've really seen, and your story about the Islamic Society of Boston, Abdurrahman Alamoudi's old operation, your story about the Muslim American Society, and of course, the various alliances that he has struck with the Muslim Brotherhood, his accommodations of the Taliban, his efforts to topple friendly governments in the Middle East, his deals with Iran. all of this very strongly affirms what you've just said, which the president is on the wrong side, and he's putting America not only on the wrong side, but at risk. Charles Jacobs, we have to leave it at that for the moment. We appreciate so much your leadership in this very important fight, the counter-jihad, as I call it, notably the work you're doing today at Americans for Peace and Tolerance. Please check out his website, peaceandtolerance.org. Charles, keep it up and come back to us again, if you would, very soon.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We have the great privilege of being joined once again by a friend and colleague I admire greatly. She is Catherine Gorka. She has contributed mightily to my personal understanding of much of the trouble we're facing, but also to that of a great many others, I believe. And I wanted to just say, Catherine, the work that you do at the Council on Global Security, which you co-founded and preside over, and your work at Breitbart News, and not least your important book that you co-edited, Fighting the Ideological War, Winning Strategies from Communism to Islamism, have been most inspiring and informative and helpful to me, and I appreciate them so much. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to start with an issue that I discussed a moment ago with Charles Jacobs and we'll be discussing throughout the program, namely the president's approach to what he calls countering violent extremism, which will be on display, of course, at a White House summit tomorrow. What do you make, particularly against the backdrop of the murder of Christians that he will not bring himself to name, of the fact that he can't seem to name the jihadist enemies either?
Yeah, it's a major problem. You know, fortunately, more and more people are acknowledging it and discussing it. I think it really came into sharp relief with this latest murder of the 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians, where Obama, when he acknowledged it, wouldn't even acknowledge that they were Christian. And I think we're seeing the price of that in the failure of his policies, both in fighting ISIS, but in, quote, countering violent extremism. I mean, we're just not getting anywhere, it feels.
Yeah. One of the things the New York Times reports on today, apparently, is a story about how the administration is going to try to ramp up its social networking because it has, I guess, done such an appallingly poor job on that front, among others, at the moment that groups like the Islamic State are demonstrating considerable proficiency. Is this simply a technical or a mechanical problem, in your estimation, Catherine, or is it a much larger symptom of a failure to want to come to grips with the problem? Catherine Gorka is our guest from the Council on Global Security. And Catherine, we were talking about the president's unwillingness or perhaps inability to address the reality of the threat we're facing. Charles Jacobs has talked about this as both denial and deception, to the extent that we've not, in fact, done a better job at it. Do you think more fundamentally there is a reason to believe that the administration, the president himself, does not comprehend what we're about or want to?
Yeah, I think it's not the mechanics. I think it's the substance. And the fact that we are not approaching this the right way is demonstrated by the utter failure of our, you know, information operations. It's not a lack of resources. You know, we're spending almost a billion dollars a year at the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which covers things like Radio Free Europe and Al-Hura. They're doing nothing to counter ISIS. Then we've got the State Department Countering Terrorism Communications, and they have, you know, the Facebook page, which has a paltry 10,500 followers. I mean, that's pathetic. And their hashtag, which I think is just meaningless, where they're saying to members of ISIS, think again, turn away. I mean, it reminds me of that really pointless campaign, just say no to drugs, right? I mean, whoever just said no because of that campaign. And in contrast, I mean, one of the things that I've been following is, for example, you have Christians, you have former Muslims who are messaging into the Muslim world, and some of the more prominent people in that community, they've got upwards of 1.5 million Facebook followers. And I think it's because there's real substance to their message, whereas the State Department, I mean, it's like a slap on the wrist. How do they think that they're going to get anywhere with that kind of messaging?
Yeah. Well, and more to the point, there is, at the moment, evidence that they're winning. I mean, these murders of Christians, a great many Muslims, and others wherever they can get their hands on them, whether it's in cafes in Denmark or whether it's in journals in Paris or whether it's in Syria and Iraq and elsewhere. And to the extent that they don't see pushback, effective countervailing force, most especially being brought to bear, Catherine Gorka, you've documented, notably in your book, Fighting the Ideological War, that, you know, you need to have credibility as well as content. And in part that comes from the resolve that you're demonstrating to use force if necessary, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right, and we're not winning. I mean, ISIS is spreading farther afield, and now in this latest video, as well as some of the tweets that have come out subsequent, they've set their sights on Rome. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens in Rome in the coming weeks. I mean, they have not been slowed.
Do you regard this as the focus of the problem, though, Catherine? I know you and your husband, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, have been very prominent in other settings and conversations talking about the global jihad movement. Is this not simply a manifestation of that movement? And is there a danger that we might become so preoccupied by what is admittedly a dangerous and difficult one to ignore the larger problem?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right about that. And yeah, I mean, we have, you know, the spotlight is on ISIS right now because they are certainly the most effective. But it's a much broader problem than that. And frankly, it's not just the violent jihadists we have to be concerned about, but it's the nonviolent jihadists. And that's why, you know, a policy like countering violent extremism really isn't going to solve the problem, because it's not the violence that's really fundamentally the issue. It's the extremism, and it's everywhere right now.
Yeah. The ideology, they call it Sharia, the program that they're following. And you're so right. I tend to think of it not so much as nonviolent jihad, as pre-violent jihad. It's, you know, the kind of thing that the Muslim Brotherhood is doing while they create conditions under which they can engage in violence. And unfortunately, some of the people that the president is embracing at this countering violent extremism meeting, and certainly in previous meetings, have been Muslim Brotherhood operatives themselves, which is a further indication that we're on the wrong track for sure. Catherine, speaking of the wrong track, let me just ask you very quickly about a phenomenon that has been apparently surging here in the United States. Talk about this abhorrent practice of female genital mutilation by people who, it appears, generally are embracing this Sharia program.
Yes, that's right. Well, I don't know if the sharp rise in numbers is just a correlation to the sharp rise in numbers of Muslim immigrants, but reports have come out in the last few days that apparently the numbers are much greater than previously thought. I think the number quoted was approximately 168,000 women either had been subjected to it or were at risk of it. Now they're estimating more than 500,000, and it'll be interesting to see in the coming weeks. The Centers for Disease Control is apparently coming out with a new study, and that's the source of these numbers. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, that organization has a lot of credibility, and if they're coming out and saying this number is very high, I think it's going to do a lot to push back on the message that Obama is pushing, which is that, you know, this is just a religion like any other, and it's a religion of peace, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, I was struck, there was a report in USA Today last week, Catherine Gorka, in which they cited a poll that had been done by an independent group, and they found that 44% of women polled were very concerned about Sharia coming to America. And this female genital mutilation business, which not all Muslims practice, needless to say, and I guess not necessarily all who subscribe to Sharia do, but enough do, and 500,000 women in this country being subjected to it or at risk of it is such an abhorrent thought. It's unimaginable. Catherine, we thank you again for the great work you do at the Council on Global Security. Keep it up and come back to us again very soon. Next up, Andy McCarthy joins us. We'll talk with him about this violent extremism business and whether it's denial or deception. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom. With Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
Tomorrow, President Obama will try to put the proverbial lipstick on a pig. Actually, in deference to the sensibilities of the many Muslims in attendance at his Countering Violent Extremism Summit, it won't be a pig, but never mind. The president will try to obscure a very ugly reality. In Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, Egypt, Iran, and yes, our own country, he has consistently aligned his administration with jihadists. And no matter how often he says it, the problem is not violent extremists. It is such Islamic supremacists and their holy war. They are avowed enemies of this country at home and abroad and perceive what America is doing under this president as submission, which is a formula for more jihad, not less. Mr. Obama, stop obscuring, excusing, and enabling global jihad. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. It's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Frank Affney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back to the high point of our week, our visit with Andy McCarthy, the former federal prosecutor turned pundit par excellence, a man we catch on the fly on his way, I believe, to a Fox studio. Andy, it's always good to have you with us. Thank you for taking a few minutes to update us on, among other things, your thinking on the president's Countering Violent Extremism Summit. Welcome back.
Nice to be here, Frank. Yeah, I think the Countering Violent Extremism is something that's going to have exactly, at best, the opposite effect of what the administration purports it to be about. When you say that you're countering violent extremism and that's your public position, what that tells people is that you're not willing to come to grips with what actually is causing the problem, which is Sharia supremacist ideology. And that's the best interpretation of it. I think there's a less benign interpretation as well.
Which would be?
That the administration has formulated its countering violent extremism strategy with the very people who are aiding and abetting the enemy.
And this was a point that Charles Jacobs made in the previous segment, Andy McCarthy, particularly as the administration will be showcasing, we're told, at this summit, the model of Boston. And Andy pointed out this is sounds a lot like the successful Yemen model for dealing with the Islamic State, not likely to succeed. And potentially, this is all having the effect of emboldening these guys, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the bottom line with all of this, Frank, is that the people who are a challenge to us are looking very carefully at whether we're serious or unserious. And when you won't even name the enemy and when you're colluding with all the wrong people, it tells them that they have a wide berth to continue doing the evil things they do. And unfortunately, I think that's where we are.
Yeah. And Andy McCarthy, you have been, of course, on this case literally back since 1994, I believe, when you prosecuted the first effort to topple the World Trade Center at the hands of Omar Abdul-Rahman and his co-conspirators. And over that time, I think you've arrived at the same conclusion that I have, namely that when you behave in this sort of fashion, it is not unreasonably, but certainly perceived by these sorts of folks as submission. And what is the response that they are canonically told to conduct themselves in when they see the infidel submitting?
Yeah, well, submission is what they're after, as it has often been pointed out, particularly since the Charlie Hebdo atrocities. Islam doesn't mean peace, it means submission, and submission is what Sharia supremacists are after. And when you do try to conduct yourself civilly and in an accommodating fashion, they take that as weakness and submission, and they push for more, and that's exactly what's happened.
Make them feel subdued, as they say. Andy, one particular manifestation of this sort of submissiveness that the Obama administration has been inclined towards, as you've written about this week at National Review Online, but also, of course, our European allies and indeed others around the world, the United Nations, not least, has been an accommodation of the demands of these jihadists for what they call Sharia blasphemy restrictions. Tell us where you think this stands at the moment and where it is likely to hit.
Well, at the moment, they have gotten a Human Rights Council at the UN resolution, which purports to make illegal expression or speech that would incite hostility to Islam, which can be interpreted to mean anything that would be negatively critical of Islam, whether it's true or not. And that certainly is where they're, you know, where they're trying to edge in. I think they're trying to pivot off that in order to fill our law and particularly our practice and our law enforcement with the notion that anything that you say about Islam that might be perceived as provocative is something that can't and shouldn't be said.
And to the extent that we're engaging in this, Andy, and we've seen attacks now since we last spoke in Denmark, as well, of course, as in Paris a few weeks back, aimed at enforcing Sharia blasphemy laws, specifically going after free speech advocates or practitioners. Do you anticipate that where we're going to find ourselves, even in this country, with our First Amendment rights and so on, is that we will find not only self-censorship, but the kind of peer pressure and shaming, maybe, that the former Secretary of State declared was going to be administration policy?
Yes, we're already seeing these kinds of extortionate, extra-legal efforts by government and particularly organizations that are colluding with government to use extra-legal means, non-legal means, to discourage statements about Islam that are unflattering. In Europe, of course, those statements are already actionable. And again, I would stress to people that truth is not a defense. So even if you know, under our libel law, you're allowed to say things that are unflattering and even provocative if they're true. And in Europe, that's not a defense either, because they've decided that basically they've given up what we call here the heckler's veto. They've decided that if you're rambunctious enough or you threaten violence enough, that's enough for the state to say you should be silent. Not that the people who would do the violence should refrain from doing the violence.
A chilling of free speech, to say the least, and a chilling thought that we may find ourselves subjected to this as well, especially, as you say, Andy McCarthy, if the practical effect is only further to embolden the Sharia supremacists. Andy, you participated in a marvelous meeting that we had the privilege of sponsoring last week, the Defeat Jihad Summit. It happened to coincide with the submission to the Congress of the authorization for the use of military force by President Obama. What are your thoughts on that authorization? Again, I know you've written at National Review about this, but share with us your concerns about its unconstitutionality.
Yeah, as a legal matter, Frank, I think it's unconstitutional. And perhaps even more significantly, as a practical matter, I think it signals weakness again to the enemy. It's unconstitutional in the sense that what Obama is asking Congress to do is limit his ability to use ground troops under circumstances, by the way, where everybody knows that ground troops are going to be necessary if we're actually going to take on ISIS and Al-Qaeda in a serious way. And it also purports to put an end date on a war. Basically, the president is saying this would have to be revisited in 3 years, when most people understand that wars don't come with an end date. But in particular, the limitation on the commander-in-chief to not use ground forces is something that Congress simply doesn't have the power to do. Congress can authorize war. That's an important constitutional process. But what assets are brought to bear in order to fight and win the war is a commander-in-chief decision. The Constitution makes the president the commander-in-chief. Congress can authorize the war, or it can cut off money for the war if it doesn't think the president is prosecuting it properly. But what it can't do is command the war. That's for the president to do, and Congress simply can't tell the president that he can't use ground forces in a war that Congress has authorized.
Andy, let me turn to another matter that, particularly with your background in the Justice Department, I'm most anxious to get your take on. A federal judge in Texas has struck down, at least temporarily, the president's overreach, about which you have written brilliantly in Faithless Execution, your most recent book. What do you make of this action by this federal judge on the immigration executive amnesty, and do you think it'll stand?
Yeah, I think we should be we should not get ahead of ourselves on this. All the judge has done in Texas is basically say that Obama can't begin to implement the program. He hasn't made a final ruling on the merits, although, you know, truthfully, he wouldn't have issued the stay unless he thought that it was likely that the 26 states that have brought this lawsuit would succeed. I think, however, there are profound questions, at least as far as federal law is concerned, about whether the states have standing or not, and whether, taking their cues from the Supreme Court, whether the federal courts are going to want to take this issue on under circumstances where they can basically punt by saying, you know, the plaintiffs don't have standing. That way they can uphold Obama's illegal order without ruling on whether it's illegal or not. And I think ultimately, Frank, this has to be a political reversal. Congress is going to have to deny funding to the president if they really want this not to happen.
Well, there are some on the Hill who have been trying to do that, not with as much success as we would all like, I think, Andy. But I appreciate your analysis on this matter, as on all others. It's always a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you. Thank you for taking the time, both last week and in the course of our program today. Keep up the terrific work you do at National Review Online and PJ Media and Encounter Books and elsewhere, and come back to us again soon. Next up, Representative Scott Perry will take us on a tour of his thinking on the AUMF and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. Something unusual occurred in the aftermath of President Obama's State of the Union address when Washington Post columnist Glenn Kessler cited research from the Center for Security Policy in his Fact Checker column to fault the truthfulness of the president's statements about his efforts to halt the threat from Iran's nuclear program. Kessler cited a chart prepared by the center showing that Iran's enrichment of uranium has surged since 2009 and that Iran can now make at least 8 nuclear weapons from its enriched uranium stockpile. It is unheard of for the mainstream media to cite conservatives on arms control issues. The Post's decision to cite the Center's research reflects both the high quality of our work as well as growing concerns about the president's Iran policy. You can read our report issued last November, Why Congress Must Repudiate the Nuclear Talks with Iran, on the SecureFreedom.org website. I'm Fred Fleitz.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm a firefighter.
A teacher.
I'm a farmer.
I'm a barber.
A waitress. A mom.
We're all part of your community. Every day we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life. It's when you experience a moment of uncertainty, something or someone's behavior that doesn't seem quite right.
These are the moments to take a pause.
Because if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
It's not about paranoia
or being afraid.
It's about standing up and protecting our communities.
One detail at a time.
Because a lot of little details can become a pattern.
We
trust our instincts.
Just like you should.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I am thrilled to have, for the first time, I believe, at Secure Freedom Radio, a guest, as I've come to know him, a great member of Congress and patriot and warrior to boot. He is Representative Scott Perry. He represents with great distinction the people of the 4th Congressional District of Pennsylvania and serves in the United States Congress now on the Foreign Affairs and Homeland Security Committee and on the Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. We're going to talk about things that fall into several of those portfolios. But first of all, let me say, Congressman, how delighted I am to have you with us today and to have had you with us at our Defeat Jihad Summit last week as well. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate being here, and I appreciate your work
in this arena.
Well, listen, thank you. The main point is that we had last week, as I mentioned, a meeting that you attended, and we talked at some length about precisely this point, the failure to understand the nature of the enemy, the extent to which, as a result, we're not following a sensible strategy for dealing with them. You've served in Iraq as an Army aviator with 44 combat missions. You've seen the pointy end of the spear, very, very close up and personal, as they say. And yet, at tomorrow's so-called Countering Violent Extremism Summit that the White House is going to be undertaking, it seems as though we're going to get more of this kind of vacuousness at best, by some accounts, denial of the reality and even deception. What do you make of that, Congressman, and what should we be doing instead?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't make much of it from the standpoint of actually getting into the business of doing work and defeating the enemy. And it just goes part and parcel to what the president and this administration has done for their entirety, not only as the administration and as the president before, but before, you know, he got here. I mean, he talks about defeating the enemy, but his actions are incongruent with his words. And this is just another example of that. You know, he has the most capable and largest military in the world, not to mention the greatest instruments of power on the globe at his grasp, at his fingertips at any moment. Yet he seems to be more willing and more interested to meet with folks and have some kind of a photo op about talking about inclusiveness and so on and so forth, when the rest of America certainly understands, and much of the world, and including the Arab and Muslim world, the moderate Muslim world, understands that we and he is not dealing with rational actors. And so, you know, all these nice conversations, you know, quite honestly, I just see it as wasting time, which is what we're doing now. We're just wasting time. The enemy is gaining in strength, and as you can see, and as you're well aware, gaining in territory. And, you know, the rhetoric just continues. Just today, the statement out of the administration was about these Coptic Christians, these Egyptian Christians being killed in Libya, a new front, by the way, for ISIS, as you know, and not a mention of the word Christianity, not a mention of the word of Judaism regarding the attack in Paris at the cafe, and never a mention of the radical Islamists and the jihadists that are distorting the religion for their distorted view and seeking world dominance in that regard. So, you know, what should we do about it? What can we do about it? Well, you know, the president has finally asked for the authorization of the use of force. And what America needs to know, he's actually asking for less power than he currently has, than less power than he currently has been using for the last, 6 months or so under Article 2 and the two previous AUMFs. And I don't understand, and I think American doesn't understand, if they recognize that situation, how that makes us more capable of defeating our enemy, whether it's on a military level or on all the other, you know, the other paradigms that we should be using, the financial level, the diplomatic level, and the pressure we can bring to bear on neighbors and neighboring countries that can have some very, very strong influence on the fight. None of that's happening.
Yeah. Well, as you know, Congressman, we've recommended precisely that kind of more comprehensive all instruments of national power strategy and what we call the secure freedom strategy, which we talked about at the meeting the other day. And I think as you and your colleagues evaluate in the House Foreign Affairs Committee, notably this authorization for the use of military force, as it's called, I very much hope that you'll be giving some thought to this as an alternative approach that certainly seems to me to be more likely to conduce to success, as it did, you know, under President Reagan a generation ago. Let me turn to another topic that I know is also very much on your mind, Congressman Scott Perry from Pennsylvania. You have both responsibilities on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and in the Homeland Security Committee. For the infrastructure of the United States, and it is, in fact, extremely vulnerable. It's got a lot of problems, but perhaps the most vulnerable is the most critical of the critical infrastructures, the electric grid. And I wondered if you might give us your thoughts. I know there was a hearing in one of the subcommittees on which you serve in Homeland Security last week on this broader issue of infrastructure vulnerability, but How urgent a priority do you think it should be for us to try to make that electric grid, which supports all of the other critical infrastructures, substantially more resilient against the various threats it faces?
Well, I happen to believe it's certainly more urgent than many of the things that the administration is trying to transform within our country while turning a blind eye to the international circumstances. But that having been said, of all the things the president could be focusing on, our infrastructure is vulnerable, and we have state and non-state actors who are picking away at it every single day. And it's just a matter of time until I think that there is a major incident which really impacts Americans' lives. But even that having been said, Frank, Lloyd's of London has said regarding a solar flare, which would create something known as an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, is not a matter of if, but when. And to be clear, this, depending on the magnitude of it, could devastate the electricity grid in the United States, not only for days, but literally for years. And if you think about, it's one thing being out in the country where you might raise your own food and so on and so forth and be able to live off the land. Most Americans are not prepared for that, certainly not in our urban areas. And it would literally be a short amount of time before society and civil society would really break down. And then you juxtapose that with the fact that somebody like Iran is developing an intercontinental ballistic missile, not necessarily saying nuclear tip, but they're working towards that, as you know, as well. But let's say they just put an EMP device on it and send the thing across the ocean, over New York City or Washington, D.C. or any of the major metropolitan areas. And you could have a cascading effect that could be so debilitating to the United States, the effects of which we are not prepared for. Most people don't understand that the major transformer at each power plant, those are not produced in the United States, and they're custom made for each power plant. It would take months, if not years, if these are destroyed, to deal with them and get them back online. And it's a huge issue, which we can fix, I think, relatively easily with a little bit of thoughtful consideration and collaboration between the administration and the Congress. But once again, there's a deaf ear to this type of threat, both natural and man-made, that is truly in existence right before us from this administration. And so we remain frustrated with it.
Well, we look forward to your leadership in this area, as in so many others, Congressman Scott Perry. And I know you've got a very full plate at the moment dealing with so many different threat vectors. But I've been impressed by both the intellect and the energy that you bring to these challenges, and look forward very closely to working with you. I will say that I just learned yesterday that the governor of Texas has indicated that he believes that this is something that his state legislature needs to take a leading role in for protecting the grid of the state of Texas. And I think that's a very promising development. If true, it will help perhaps move not only Texas but the nation forward in kind of resiliency that needs to be done. Congressman, in the meantime, we thank you very much for joining us and look forward to talking with you again in the near future. We look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.